Welcome to Eastern Standard, produced for WEKU by Dynamics Productions. I'm Tom Martin. Thanks for joining us. These are both exciting times and a dark moment in the area arts community. First, the excitement. Our next 10-minute radio play is coming later in this hour. There's a much-anticipated novel coming soon from Silas House. Steve Zahn has been nominated for a Best Supporting Actor Emmy for his role in HBO's White Lotus. Some of the dialogue for that series, by the way, recorded right here at Dynamics Productions. And as we're about to hear from Tom Eblin, the Library of Congress has announced that Ada Limón will become the 24th Poet Laureate of the United States.
Limón will soon begin a one-year term as the nation's official poet. It's a public but privately funded job with a rather loose set of responsibilities. Each poet laureate puts his or her own stamp on the role, using their unique talents and points of view to speak to the nation and promote the reading and writing of poetry. Limón, who is 46 years old, is of Mexican-American heritage and grew up in Sonoma, California. She moved to Lexington several years ago with her husband, who works in the thoroughbred industry, and she has become an enthusiastic fan of Central Kentucky. Limón has published 6 collections of poetry and won many awards, including the 2018 National Book Critics Circle Award. She was a finalist for the 2015 National Book Award in Poetry. Her most recent book, The Hurting Kind, was published in May. Last fall, Limón took another high-profile role as host of the daily podcast The Slowdown, produced by American Public Media and the Poetry Foundation. We're pleased to have Ada Limón with us today to talk about her role as Poet Laureate of the United States. Ada, welcome.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure.
Well, how and when did you find out about being chosen as the next Poet Laureate?
I found out on June 1st, and as you might imagine, I nearly collapsed. There was a Zoom call that they asked me to be a part of, and it was through my friend and representative, Vaughn Fielder of the field office, who's also based here in Lexington. She said, you need to take a Zoom call at 9:35, not before, not after, 9:35. It's very specific. And she wouldn't tell me what it was about. Hmm. And, you know, she's incredibly forthcoming, and we share all of our details. We're dear friends, mm-hmm. as well as, you know, colleagues. And so she said, nope, it's confidential. And she said, you might want to get dressed up for this one. And so I logged on, and there in the center of the Zoom call, on the grid of Zoom, mm-hmm. Was Dr. Carla Hayden, the Librarian of Congress. And she was with her team, and she just said, I would like to invite you to be the 24th Poet Laureate of the United States.
Wow. Has it sunk in yet?
No. I think that the shock of the news sort of sent me out of my body, and now I'm slowly returning to myself.
Yeah. Well, what does this honor mean to you?
You know, I think it's really an incredible honor, but for so many reasons, it's also the timing of this position is really fascinating to me, because I think I really don't like the phrase now more than ever, mm-hmm. but I do feel like right now we really need poetry in our lives. And I know that sounds like I'm being dramatic, but I really believe in its power and its importance to help us heal. And I think we're just moving from one chaotic event to the next chaotic event, and not doing any processing and not doing any breathing and not doing any just self-check-ins. And I think poetry is that way of just spending a moment remembering that you're a thinking, feeling, alive human being living in the world. And not many of us have the time, or at least we think we don't have that time, to do that kind of work, to process and heal. And I think poetry can be a tool for that. And I don't think we're going to be braver and stronger and more courageous and more prepared to take action if we don't do that healing, mm-hmm. and we don't do that real groundwork of the soul.
Yeah. Well, so how does poetry help people do that, do you think?
You know, I think that one of the ways that poetry helps people reclaim their humanity is through its deep attention, through deep looking. You know, deep looking is a way of loving. And I think it also does it through the way that we can remember that we're not alone, that someone else may have had that experience. You know, if I write a poem about my stepmother who passed away, someone may hear it or have an experience with it and remember the person that they lost. And in that brief moment, we're connected through grief. And that's reminding us both of our humanity, regardless of what we feel about other things. We've lost someone and we're united in grief. And I think that's a really, really powerful experience. It's not just empathy, but it's the connection of all living things.
Well, each poet laureate in recent years has had some kind of a special project or an emphasis. For instance, Tracy K. Smith's created The Slowdown, which you now host. In addition to The Slowdown, do you have any plans yet, or are you still thinking that over?
I'm still thinking it over, and I appreciate you asking if I'm still thinking it over. But I would like to see a project that might emphasize poetry in public spaces. I would love for people to have accidental and unexpected experiences with poetry. I'd also love to see poetry in green spaces so that we can recognize the natural world and its connection through poetry as well.
Yeah, I remember when there used to be poems on the subway cars in New York City and other places like this. That the type of thing you mean?
Yes, exactly. I love poetry in motion. That project is amazing. And I feel like we need more of that, and maybe not just in transportation, but how can we make it so that people can have an unexpected experience with a poem, you know, and not necessarily have to seek it out? Because I think so often we think we find poetry, but truly, I think poems find us.
Well, when we spoke here last fall, you mentioned that one thing you love about living in Lexington is that it gives you time and space for your work. How do you think being poet laureate will change your life?
Well, it's definitely more of a public role. And one of the things that I keep reminding myself is that the position isn't about me. It's about poetry. And, you know, I get to be the spokesperson for poetry, the cheerleader for poetry. And there's nothing I'd rather advocate for than poetry. But it will, I think, maybe, as you might understand, make me a little more busy. So I think I'm going to have to work hard to carve out some time to keep writing and to keep returning to my home base here in Kentucky and make sure that I can do the sort of self-care and the breathing work that I advocate for myself so that I'm, you know, able to go out there and promote and be a wholehearted person as I do it.
Well, as a poet, what do you hope readers take away from your poetry?
You know, one of the things that I work on in my own work is letting my own poems remind me to recommit to the world. I think it's very easy to get bogged down by the sorrow and trauma and, you know, real issues of today. And at the same time, if we don't recommit to the world and we just give up, oh, what a horrible consequence, right? So I want my poems to help me recommit to the world. And I hope, I really hope, that they will help others do the same, you know, to sign up again, to sign up to life is what I hope.
Well, one last thing, your last book has just gotten glowing reviews. Do you have anything else coming out soon, or what are you working on?
The next thing that, thank you for that. The Hurting Kind did get a lot of beautiful reviews, and it's still brand new. You know, it's only been out couple months at this point. And now I'm working on, hoping to work on some new poems. I did manage to write a poem today, surprisingly. And
that is
then
surprising.
Right? It's surprising. And then I'm also working on an anthology called Beast, which is animal poems from many different poets. And I, as you know from my work, I love animals and I love talking about the natural world. And so this is an opportunity to put together an anthology of many different writers that are all honoring the animals.
Okay, well, great. Well, once again, congratulations to Ada Limón, the 24th Poet Laureate of the United States. Reporting for Eastern Standard, this is Tom Edler.
Life's like poetry, but in the poem bee, until now, there's always been a missing line. You know, life's too short to hide a good thing you feel. And I find the morning after is the best time to determine if it's real. Baby, finding you gave my whole world reason and rhyme. But life's like poetry, and in my poem, babe, until now, there's always been a missing line.
Now, that dark moment for the arts in Lexington, as we were mentioning, here's Eastern Standard Theater host Bill McCann.
My guest today is Bo List, a playwright, director, and founder of Athens West Theater Company in Lexington. Welcome to Eastern Standard, Bo List.
Thanks so much. I'm glad to be here.
You've got some sad news that you may want to share with our listeners that they may not be aware of.
Sure. After 8 years and 17 live productions, Athens West's journey is coming to a close. The pandemic took a big bite of our ability to move forward, and the obstacles ahead are insurmountable, granted the financial and human resources we have at the moment. So we're hoping to close on a good note, and while we have the time and the energy to do so responsibly and well.
And what do you mean end on a good note? Have you got some special event planned or... What?
Oh, we do not, although at some point, once everything's all said and done, we'd like to have a big party to thank all of our supporters and celebrate our history. No, we end at a time when we are very proud of all of the productions we've put forth. Our last show, Twelfth Night, was beautiful and well-acted, and we are grateful not to overstay our welcome. Sometimes an organization or an effort keeps on trucking, even if it's tired, even if it doesn't have all the resources it needs. And fortunately, we're in a position where we can do so and feel great about everything that we've done.
I'd like to focus a little bit on the history and accomplishments of Athens West rather than its demise.
Great.
You're a native Lexingtonian with a career in professional theater. So what was it? Why did you create Athens West?
Sure. Well, I had recently moved back after years away to take a job at Fair School, where I served as director of theater from 2013 until this very year. And I knew that if I was going to be back in Lexington, I wanted to work with a theater company that I could admire and whose values and product were as high a quality as possible. And there have been a number of companies in Lexington over the years that have had those qualities. And I just wanted to add what I thought I had learned and what I had enjoyed from my travels and experiences elsewhere. And so I got together with some wonderful folk here in town and created a model of professionalism that I thought would be of service to Lexington. And that was to be able to work with local actors who may or may not have an interest in pursuing it as a career, as well as union actors who at the time had great difficulty working in Lexington because there was not a theater company that had regular union contracts. And combine the two so that anybody who wanted to work in Lexington as an actor could do so. We began with our first production, which was John Patrick Shanley's Pulitzer Prize-winning Doubt back in 2015. And it was a success and encouraged us to keep going. And we did 16 more, as well as a handful of original radio plays during the pandemic when the most responsible theater we could produce was theater where our audience could sit at home.
So who else was involved with founding Athens West besides yourself?
Our founders were myself, Kate Goodwin, who was a production manager early on, and Mark Mazingo, who has been our associate artistic director since the beginning.
And what about some of the actors who've been involved over the years?
Oh, we've worked with so many wonderful actors. I'm almost afraid to start naming them because I'm going to leave out someone important, but we've had... Shane Brakefield and Joe Gatton, Leslie Beatty, Melissa Wilkerson, Kelsey Waltermeyer, Walter Tunis, people who, an exciting mix of people who've been doing this in the area for a long time, as well as some new and emerging talent, either from the University of Kentucky or Transylvania or even some of our local high schools.
Why, BoList, was Athens West a success? What did you achieve? How did you do that?
I think it was a success, and certainly there are other companies out there who have achieved more financial success, companies that grew bigger, have lasted longer. The things that I'm most proud of in Athens West are the way we treated the people we worked with, hopefully with great respect and dignity, and we believed that artists should be paid for their work. And to that end, our staff has worked chiefly as volunteers for the last many years, hoping to eventually build to a point where the members of the company would be compensated. But we just wanted all the money that we earned to show up on stage in sets and costumes and props and in performances. So valuing labor, valuing work, and valuing the time and training it takes to become a good artist, I think that's what I'm most proud of.
Is there a particular production you're most proud of, or maybe productions?
You know, I've given it a lot of thought these last few days as we've figured out how to wrap things up, and had many misty watercolor memories of all of our shows. And even though I'm really delighted by all of them, there's one that we did back in 2017 called Failure, A Love Story by Philip Dawkins and directed by the marvelous Jerry Dye. And it's imaginative and weird, and the design was very adventurous and fun, and the actors played lots of different roles. And I think for me, that was the show that demonstrated most clearly what our company was capable of artistically, and also a way forward for an exciting new play that our audiences had not known before, but really loved.
Unfortunately, the COVID pandemic came along, and like many theaters, whether in New York, Lexington, Berea, the consequences for theater, for live performance arts of many kinds, was devastating. Did COVID and not being able to do live theatrical events the only reason for Athens West closings, or were there other factors as well?
There's probably 1,000 factors, and I will tell you that we were on a really good roll until COVID happened. The main thing that we needed to be able to do in a short amount of time was to match the quality of our infrastructure behind the scenes as what showed up on the stage. So while we always felt very good about the plays that we produced, we knew very urgently that we needed to raise enough money to hire part-time and then full-time staff to run the theater. Myself, our associate producer, Marianne Miller, Mark, our production manager, Karen Leffler, we all had full-time lives and full-time jobs outside of the theater, and we did Athens West on the side. And we always knew that wasn't sustainable in the long run, and we did our best to raise the money and the energy we needed to change that. We're on a good path until the pandemic hit, and then the pandemic took kind of a fatal toll on our ability to do that in the long run.
Mm. Well, BoList, what does the future look like for you after 8 years of being producer, director, and arts administrator for Athens West? Where are you going from here?
Well, I just began a new position that I'm very excited about at Redwood Cooperative School, where I serve as the director of arts and communications. I'm looking forward to doing some more playwriting, which I know and hope you'll be excited about, because that's the kind of thing that makes your socks roll up and down, just like it does me.
It is.
And after being kind of a one-band man for a long time, hopefully this will give me the chance to work with a lot of companies that I haven't had time to work with in the last several years. My energies have been chiefly devoted to Athens West, and I'll be really interested to cast my lot with some of the other wonderful efforts in town, if they'll have me.
Okay, I'm sure they will. Perhaps it's too early to ask this. Perhaps you'll need more time to evaluate things. But Athens West was preceded by Actors Guild of Lexington, which was dark about the time you opened. Has Lexington had its shot at having a professional theater, providing opportunities for actors, stage managers, and others? Or do you think a professional theater is still possible here?
I think it's very possible, and I've always grimaced it when people have said that it's impossible, why are we even bothering? I think it's absolutely possible, even though we've had our shot and it did not work out the way that we had hoped. What it will involve is when an effort comes along and audiences know that it's of great quality, is that its supporters rush in and support it quickly and without reservation. it will need a lot of money up front, and then even more money to grow as much as it's going to need to grow in order to survive in the long run. And I would like to point out that there's a really wonderful company in town, the Lexington Theater Company, that is absolutely thriving, doing professional musical work. I hope that there will be a company that comes along that does the kind of provocative dramas that Athens West considered its bailiwick. And we have a lot of wonderful community theaters and academic theaters as well doing the important good work that they're supposed to do. But in terms of being a town that can support a theater company that will do work that will challenge and excite and sometimes enrage its audience with non-musical work, absolutely that's possible, and I can't wait to support it when it comes along.
Is there anything that can be done to kind of seed the ground, make it easier perhaps for someone to come ahead and do that?
I suspect there are already companies out there that are positioned to expand, or knowing that nature abhors a vacuum, if there's any amount of vacuum that we leave behind, I can't help but imagine that there's some exciting young talent ready to fill it. That said, since we've announced our impending closure, we've had a lot of community members and supporters of ours send very lovely, generous notes to us acknowledging the work that we had done and what it meant to them. Their appetite for good storytelling is going to feed that better than anything I could say now.
My guest today has been Bo List, who's discussed a little bit about the history and accomplishments of Athens West Theater Company, which he helped co-found and lead throughout its 8-year history. Thank you for bringing Athens West to Lexington, Bo List. I'm sorry it didn't work out. I think I can speak for many when I say we appreciate your efforts on behalf of theater and the arts.
Well, thank you. You asked earlier about my favorite play, and there's a great line. There's a character who says, just because something ends doesn't mean it wasn't a great success. So we'll be looking back at the 8 years that we had with Athens West and feeling very good about the success and feeling good about whatever adventures lie ahead.
That's wonderful. Thank you. This is Bill McCann for Eastern Standard.
Megan Gullah's with us. She is Director of Programs at Civic Lex, Lexington's nonprofit civic education organization. And she's here with us for an update on the group's Artist in Residence program. It's a collaborative work of Civic Lex, Bluegrass Community Foundation, the City of Lexington, supported by an Our Town grant from the National Endowment for the Arts. Welcome to Eastern Standard, Megan.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for having me here today.
Sure. And remind our listeners about this initiative. What is the Civic Lex Artist in Residence program?
Sure. So it is a 13-month-long, as you said, Artist in Residence program. The different thing about it than maybe other Artist in Residence programs that you've heard about before is that we placed artists within departments in Lexington City government. So a lot of cities have sort of like just city Artist in Residence. But we have artists in these departments kind of looking at the daily, you know, sort of how these departments work on a day-to-day basis and how they communicate with residents and with each other. And the whole goal was to have them sort of reimagine solutions to maybe some stuck aspects that the employees are facing within these departments, and then also re-envision like ways to communicate with residents and in a fun and creative way. Like, how do we use art to bridge these gaps that we often find between government and the residents?
How can or how do artists make constructive changes to the way things are done at City Hall?
The three artists that we have right now have done some really amazing projects and all very different from each other. And when we set out, you know, we didn't tell them what we wanted. We didn't give them any idea of like, this is what we think you should do. We were just like, you're the creative expert here, kind of whatever you want to do and whatever you think would work. You know, we'll give you the support to do that. So we have three wildly different projects. We have Deborah Falk, who's a comedian, and Deborah did a series of improv workshops with a bunch of different offices and programs within the social services department and other organizations kind of around town. So she would go to these different programs and groups and work with them through a series of improv games. One that I've seen her do a bunch of times now is called The Name Game. So she would ask participants to give their name and then do a movement. And so each person would, you know, say their name and then repeat the movement for everyone, and would just go around a big circle. So it gets people out of their comfort zones, gets them thinking creatively, and also trusting each other and being a little bit vulnerable, and also just funny and kind of zany. And so go through different games like that. And it's really working with people's ability to communicate with each other and listen and empathize. So while it seems kind of funny and goofy and it's like, oh, it's comedy, you know, the way she does it, it's really amazing how she gets people working together and really like understanding each other.
And it kind of reminds us that, hey, you know what? It's okay to have fun at work.
Yes, absolutely. I think with a lot of the groups that she's done this with, you know, it's kind of like, well, no, they're not even shorter versions. Just it's larger groups of just, you know, like different people from different departments. And afterwards, because we did one with the LFUCG, just staff, just whoever wanted to come who was, you know, not busy at that time during the day, they could join us. And they were saying like, oh, you have to bring this to our department. This is amazing. This would help us out so much. So I think people don't understand or don't maybe realize how much something like that can help them or, you know, kind of bring them along. But once they do it, they really see the difference that it makes.
Okay. Tell us about Hannah Allen.
Hannah Allen, they all did incredible work. I'm really excited to see Hannah's project. She did a series of quilts, and she was in the Department of Finance. So all of her quilts have something to do with the work in the Department of Finance. So a lot of them kind of display graphically and through fabric what the city spends its money on, those different programs that are happening in the city. One of her quilts is on sort of the Narcan program. Mm-hmm. So it's this bright pink color because that's what the color of the drug actually is. And it kind of mimics the structure of the drug as well. So she really incorporated so many things, you know, about these programs into the quilt. And she did a lot of experimentation with dyes and with construction. Size and materials. She also did a quilt made entirely out of plastic bags, like Kroger bags that you have a ton of at your house probably. And that one probably, I think, just about killed her. She told us she was just working with that, trying to manipulate the fabric and get it to do what she wanted it to do for a while before, you know, she kind of figured out how to get it done.
And her works are on display, is that right?
Yes, she is going to be having an exhibit. It's opening July 30th, and there's a reception on July 30th from 5 to 7 p.m., and that will go through October 3rd. So you have plenty of time to catch all of her quilts there. And she's got a lot of explanation about each one. So it really goes into detail on what she was thinking when she was creating those quilts and how it relates to the Department of Finance.
Third is Anthony Gilmore.
Tony has also done a completely amazing project and one that we weren't expecting at all. So Tony came on as a filmmaker, and all of us were expecting him to do a film, like some kind of film, either, you know, just a sort of feature or a short film or a documentary. But as he got into the sort of like project development process, he just realized that we just didn't have enough time or like enough of a budget to really do a well-produced film. So he kind of took inspiration from the period during COVID. He was playing a lot of games, like board games, with his kids. And he got the idea, like, why not make a board game? So that's what he did. And it's really fascinating. I know he's still, he's putting the final touches on it, but I've seen most of it so far. And he's designed all these different cards and pieces of the game. There's dice, the board itself. So he spent so much time on just like the design and layout, the look of the game, and also the logic and playthrough. So it's a real functioning game. And it explains just what the Department of Environmental Quality and Public Works does, kind of what their employees are doing on a day-to-day basis. So it's also really fascinating. And I'm excited to see that like final version.
Any feedback from employees about how they might've been influenced by that work?
I think they've all enjoyed having the artist, you know, with them and working with them. I think with Tony, that's probably been the most fun because he's had the most, it's like interactive residency, just with the nature of his project. But they've really enjoyed working with him on the game. I know they've done several just test playthroughs. And so they'll be, you know, playing through the game saying, oh, this works, this is perfect. Or like, this has happened to me. I know exactly, you know, about this situation. Or they're like, no, like this doesn't happen at all. Like we wouldn't do this, or this process is wrong. So they've enjoyed being a part of that. And then with Hannah, she's had more of a hands-off where there's just not as much interaction that you could do with finance because everything's mostly in a computer or on a spreadsheet. And then her studio is off-site as well. So it's a little bit different for her. But I think they've enjoyed just thinking out of the box a little bit of like, okay, how do we represent the information within the finance department on a quilt? Like, how does that translate at all? So it's gotten them to think a little bit creatively, which is pretty cool. I know they're just like, oh, this is so fascinating. And then with Deborah, I think anyone who's worked with Deborah who's participated in her workshops has just been like blown away and amazed. So you'll see more of Deborah as well. She has her, it's called the Comedy Bong Show, modeled after the Gong Show, and you can audition for it as well if you want to. So if you want to be part of it, check out her website at dbrainbow.com. But you can see the show starting the first Friday of every month, and the first one is going to be on August 5th, 2022 of this year. So you can catch it. It's going to be pretty crazy. I think she's looking for people who are good at comedy and sort of like show business stuff, and then people who are terrible to just come and be in front of an audience and have a good time. So if that sounds like your thing.
Where does that happen?
That is going to be, it's called Uniqueness Unlimited at 3120 Pimlico Parkway.
Is this a one-time initiative or do you hope to do it again?
We hope to do it again. So this is the first time that we have done this project, the Artist in Residence project. We were kind of, you know, since it's the first project, the first version of it, we kind of, you know, had no idea what to expect. Everything was new. We didn't know the right thing to do or the wrong thing to do or how to do things. So I think we've learned a lot with this first cohort of artists. And we would like to do this program again, absolutely. Just as always with anything, just funding is the main sort of barrier. So we're working right now on fundraising and just making sure that we can, you know, pay the artists next time, the biggest concern.
All right. That's Megan Gulla, Director of Programs at CivicLex. Thank you so much, Megan.
Thank you.
Coming up after the break, details of this summer's Levitt Amp concert series in Berea.
We're kicking things off on August the 5th.
And our next 10-minute radio play.
Herb? Herb? Herbert!
I'm Tom Martin, and you're listening to Eastern Standard on WEKU.
WEKU is supported by Hicks and Funson. Kentucky lawyers Josh Hicks, Greg Funson, Kenny Heumann, Kayla Combs, and Mitch Whitaker provide legal representation for car and truck accidents and other personal injury matters. More information at 859-777-7000. Major support for WEKU comes from Touchstone Energy Cooperatives, supplying reliable power to co-op members across the state. Co-ops are proud to support Ronald McDonald Houses in Kentucky through sponsorship and volunteerism. More info at www.togetherwesaveky.com. Now back to Eastern Standard with Tom Martin.
The 2022 Levitt Amp Berea Music Series will kick off soon. 10 free concerts over 5 weeks at Berea City Park expansion. And here with all you need to know about it is organizer Allie Blair. Hi, Allie.
Hey, Tom. Thanks so much for having me.
So let's talk about this. First of all, when does the series get underway?
So we're kicking things off on August the 5th, Friday, August 5th this year.
Okay. And so give us the lineup. Who have you recruited to perform?
Well, we have a selection of local regional musicians as well as actually international musicians this year. So we are kicking things off with a Haitian band out of Montreal, actually, on August the 5th, Fox Sambo. And then we actually have March Madness Marching Band who is going to like open for them and kick things off with a bit of a parade. So we're super excited about the first concert. Then we're bringing in the Jesse Lees from Louisville. Jocelyn and the Sweet Compression will be following up on August the 12th. The Sophia Goodman Group, which is a jazz band out of Nashville, is on August 13th. Then the Local Honeys on August the 19th with their full band. We're excited about that show, and the Possum Queens are going to be opening. And then regional favorites, Driftwood Gypsy on August 20th, B. Taylor on August 26th, and Cody Lee Meese out of Somerset on the 27th with the Poor Excuses play-in. Two Bob Crew on August the 2nd from Asheville, and then the Big Maracas will be finalizing everything, finishing out. I'm sure it's going to be a heck of a dance party on September 3rd.
Wow, that is a lot of variety. Did you curate this? Did you intentionally bring so many different genres together?
Yes, that's part of what we have been trying to do is First Friday Berea since all the way back in 2014. And then we've received a grant from the Levitt Foundation since 2017. And it's actually a requirement of the grant and part of their mission that we make sure that we present a variety of genres and we have a lot of representation on our stages. So those missions align and our values align. And it's one of the most fun parts actually about putting this whole thing together is making sure that we are, you know, putting some regional favorites and some of the styles of music that people here in Central Kentucky know and love, as well as introducing them to different, you know, world music.
And tell us a little bit more about the Levitt Foundation.
Their mission is to strengthen the social fabric of America, and they do that through gathering people through free live music. So they get people together from all different backgrounds, all across the United States, actually. This kind of series is happening from Florida all the way to Alaska, and there's 18 cities hosting a Levitt Amp site this year, and we're one of those, and we're really fortunate to have their support in making sure that this music is happening all over and that people are being able to come together and get to know their communities and their neighbors at these events.
Speaking of support, looks like you have a ton of it on the local level. Am I right about that?
We definitely could not do this without our partners. The Mountain Association, they've been supporting us for several years and they are actually a partner on the grant with us. We also have wonderful partnership started with Novellus this year and going to be supporting Habitat for Humanity by recycling all the cans that we'll be collecting from the event. That won't be going to the landfill. We'll be recycling it, and that money will go to Habitat for Humanity because of Novellus. And then Berea Kids Eat. We're actually going to be a feeding site for the meal program so that children who are 18 and under can actually be fed for free through one of our food trucks. And then tons of other layers and activities that are happening through other partnerships with other nonprofits, and including the Kentucky Mountain Bike Association, which we're excited about this year.
Well, you have every right to be excited. This is an exciting lineup. I mean, Berea is going to be hopping.
I certainly hope so. We're doing it, you know, every Friday and Saturday night for 5 weeks in a row. So definitely we are a destination, and we hope that people from around the region, around Kentucky, will drive in and maybe spend the night with us here and check out some of our businesses. We have great shopping. We've got great hiking and wonderful places to eat. So we would really love for people to come and check out the music and also see what else Berea has to offer.
Well, given some of the music, there might be some great hopping going on too.
Absolutely, for sure. We do have some after parties planned. So the music will end down at the park at 9, around 9 o'clock. But then we actually have a residency with Big Sug and the Jazz Funkers every Friday night. After that, they're going to be our official after party band. And then we also have bands on Saturday night that's going to be happening after parties at Rebel Studio and Lounge. So there's going to be a lot of music over the course of those 5 weeks.
All right, Allie. Good for you. Allie Blair, organizer of the Levitt Amp Berea Music Series. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tom. Appreciate it.
Okay, folks, we're going to ask you to put your cell phones down, and you're going to understand why in just a moment. We're really excited to bring you another in our series of 10-minute radio plays, Strained Pairs by Bill McCann, host of our series on theater production in Kentucky. And so before we begin, Bill, tell us about Strained Pairs.
Well, Herbert Hoskins, one of the main characters, is retired. He's been retired for 4 years. His wife was excited that he was going to be retired and they could spend more time together. But now he spends all his time on the phone. And so she decides to get a little revenge, maybe get his attention. And she does that by getting out a baby doll like you'd get from the store, you know, a kid would play with. And, well, it kind of takes off from there.
All right, let's listen. Herbert and Mildred are headed to dinner at their favorite diner, simply known as Mary Lee's.
Herbert! Were you paying attention? You nearly ran us into Mary's.
I didn't hit anyone. Everything's fine.
Everything's not fine. You damaged my car. Oh, thank God you weren't on your phone when you did that. The insurance company wouldn't pay out if you had been.
It's my car, too. I pay the insurance. Go ahead, look. There's no damage to our car. See? There isn't any damage. Now let's go inside and have a nice dinner, shall we?
Good evening. What on earth is the problem? Herb? Millie?
Herb ran my car up on the curb.
No, for God's sake.
Well, let me show you to your seats. Can I get you some drinks?
Oh, seems fine. What do you think, Herb? Herbert!
Fine, dear. Whatever you like.
Will you please put the phone away, Herb? This will be fine. Thank you, Mary.
I'll be your waitress tonight.
Bob's not here?
He's cooking tonight. Fred has the night off.
Must be nice to have a husband who cooks. Mine's always on the phone.
May I get you something to drink?
Water with lemon, please.
Yes, ma'am. Would Herb like something to drink?
Herb? Herb? Herbert!
Would you like something to drink, sir?
Well, I don't drink.
Bring him a sweet tea, please, Mary Lee.
Mm-hmm.
Herbert? Herbert? Herb!
No reason to shout, dear. I'm right here.
Herb? Oh, hell. Mary Lee, would you please bring us a high chair and some strained pears, please? I'll be right back, Herb.
Where'd she go?
Mrs. Hoskins headed toward the coat rack. She'll be right back. Would you like to order?
Mommy's back, Herb. What, dear? Yes, well, it will take the waitress, Mary Lee, a few minutes to bring your strained pears. Shh, it's okay.
Are you ready to order?
Oh, we'll need a few minutes. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. I'll check on your strained pears.
Thank you, dearie. Herbie, shh, it's okay. Your pears will be here in just a minute. It'll be okay. Shh. Okay, baby. It's okay. Hush now. You'll bother your daddy. He's working, you know. What? Oh, no. He loves you, Herbie. I mean, what the heck he's providing for us. Of course, you know he loves us both.
Your pears, ma'am.
Hmm?
Are you ready to order?
Yes, I'll have the meatloaf, mashed potatoes, and green beans.
Anything else, ma'am?
A bottle of milk for the baby.
What would you like, sir?
Finally gotten to me, have you?
Yes, sir.
Okay, good. The little mama's taken care of, I guess. Let's see, cod, lemon, and some tartar sauce. Green beans, corn, and cornbread.
Any dessert?
Not just yet. Thanks.
I'll bring your baby's bottle in a moment.
What do you think you're doing? That doll isn't real, you know.
Of course it's real. Just like your cell phone.
What's my phone got to do with anything?
Keep your voice down, Herb. You'll disturb the other diners.
What do I care about that? You're wasting money on a doll that's not real.
Millie, here's your baby doll's bottle.
See what I tell you? What'd that cost?
Why, nothing. The bottle came with the doll.
Men don't understand anything about dolls, do they?
This one certainly doesn't. I think this baby is alive. Thank you, dearie. Herbie Jr., it's okay. Here's your bottle. It'll be okay. Shh, okay, baby, it's okay. Hush now. You'll bother your daddy, baby. He's working, you know. What? Oh, no, he loves you, Herbie. I mean, what the heck, he's providing for us. Of course, he loves us both.
Your food should be right out.
Thank you, Mary Lee.
Well, don't you?
Don't I what? I
think that doll is real.
Of course it is. But Herbie Jr.'s not alive. Still, I know that cell phone of yours is all that you pay attention to anymore.
It's how I conduct my business. It's how I make a living.
Well, we're eating dinner in this nice little diner where we have eaten out for years, surrounded by people we've known for years. Put the phone away, Herbert.
I need it to make a living. I need it to support us.
If you really think that, Herbert Hoskins, then you have dementia of some sort. You've been retired for more than 4 years.
It's been hard for me to give up work. I need to be involved someplace.
Okay. How about if we go to the senior center tomorrow? See what's going on there.
Play bingo? No.
How about poker then?
For what, matchsticks?
More likely poker chips. Nobody has matches anymore.
Chump change.
You always told me what you liked about poker was the chance to see your friends.
Yeah, so?
Well, John and Mark both play poker there. Their wives play bingo.
Oh, well, that's different. I might like that.
Here are your orders.
Thank you, Mary Lee.
You seem awfully chummy.
We've known her for years now. Remember? We had our 25th anniversary celebration here, what, 20-odd years ago?
22 years ago, come December 6th.
Oh, a day that will live in infamy.
I don't think that's funny.
Yeah, well, we do. Oh. So, tell us, Herb, why are you addicted to your phone?
I'm addicted to my phone, am I?
You are.
Mm-hmm.
I was slow to see it, but when Mary Lee mentioned it a few days ago when I came in for lunch, it became so obvious to me.
It was? Enlighten me.
An addiction is something that has control over your life, Herbie.
A phone isn't alcohol or cocaine.
You're right. It's not. It's worse because it doesn't seem dangerous.
But it's taken you away from me. Interfered in our life because you're always on that thing instead of talking or relating to me. When was the last time we went to a concert or saw a play or a movie?
We're at dinner right now.
Yes, but you were rude to our host. We've known Mary Lee and her husband Bob since high school. We go to the same church. While you were on your phone, you ignored Mary Lee when she led us to our seats, offered you a menu, asked for your order, all those things necessary to get settled in for a nice dinner out.
Oh, I did?
You did.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Mary Lee. I didn't mean to be rude.
Thank you, Herb.
What about your phone?
I'll make you a deal, Millie. If Mary Lee will take your doll, I'll turn off my phone while we eat dinner. Deal?
No.
No.
No? Why not?
Well, let me take your phone, too. I'll put them both behind the counter. You all can pick them up when you leave.
Mom. Oh, Herbie, what's wrong now? Shh, everything will be okay. Shh. Mom. Okay, baby, it's okay. You'll bother your daddy, baby. He's working, you know. What? No, he He loves you, Herbie. He took us out to dinner, didn't he? Of course he loves us both.
Are you really going to keep that up? Talking to a silly doll?
I can put both the doll and the phone behind the counter, if you like.
It's okay, Herbie Jr. It's okay.
Oh, for God's sake.
We'll go to the senior center. You can play poker with your friends. I'll play bingo with mine. Now, give Mary Lee your phone.
What about the
doll? I'll put it back in the high chair and take it back to the coat rack.
Thank you, Herbie.
I love you, Millie.
And I love you too, Herbie.
Everything's taken care of. Oh, I see you two are holding hands. Why not kiss?
And that's exactly what they do. The end. Strained Pairs, the latest Eastern Standard 10-minute radio play. Performances written, directed, produced, and acted by Kentuckians. Strained Pairs was written by the host of our series on Kentucky theater production, Bill McCann. Directed by, and in the role of Mary Lee, Alana Gent, an associate professor in the EKU theater program. Sound designed by Neil Kesterson and Tammy Ray. And starring Deborah Martin, chair of the theater department at Berea College. And a name and voice that may ring a bell. Kentucky Humanities Director and Think History host, Bill Goodman. We have another in the works, coming soon right here on 88.9 WEKU. Next week on Eastern Standard.
Trust, time and time again, we've seen, is really a key aspect. And that's really the thing that we are trying to build.
David Mariner, who along with Kirsten Moorfield founded Cloverleaf, a platform that helps businesses and their employees, including remote workers, collaborate and solve problems such as something Kirsten calls
cognitive diversity, which basically means like the way that people think is different. And so, you know, you two people see a problem and they see it very different ways. They have different ideas of how to solve it, basically.
Mariner and Moorfield, guest of Logan Jones and Evan Knowles on the Middle Tech Podcast, shared with Eastern Standard. That wraps this week's edition. Eastern Standard is produced at the studios of Dynamics Productions. Mike Savage, executive producer. Neil Kesterson, producing engineer and audio editor. Spencer Shook, intern. Ella Fitzgeraldine, studio dog. We're online at esweku.org. You can check out the Eastern Standard Archive there, look at our series, our partners, and more. And you can sign up for our weekly e-newsletter featuring a preview of the next edition. And you can also find us at weku.org, on the WEKU app, and on NPR One and the Google News app. Want to suggest a topic? Drop us a line at es@eku.edu. I'm Tom Martin. Thanks for listening to Eastern Standard on WEKU.